Hello, my name is Lorraine of D32 Business Network, and I am really looking forward to a conversation today with Paul Klassen. Paul, how are you?
Hi, Lorraine. Very well. How are you?
I'm really, really well, thank you. Paul, you're an impressive character. Yeah, you've done.
Well, thank you.
I'll start with saying that you've also got an interesting background, which I relate to. Because it just demonstrates that you have the war scars and you're walking the talk. Yeah, do you
Lots
want
of
to
them.
just give us a little bit of an intro to who you are and what you do, Paul, before we get into, and just to frame this conversation. This conversation is around recruiting A players for your business and the importance of that for performance in the business. But before we get into that, Paul, give us an introduction to yourself and just a little bit of your background and how you ended up where you are.
Okay, super quick background. Well, who am I? I'm a complete and utter business nerd. I love business. I love the benefits, and particularly SMEs. I'm very passionate about helping SMEs. And the why of that is that I studied software engineering at university, and I've never written a line of code in anger in my life. I fell backwards into business. Happened to through a lot of hard work and a lot of thinking, I grew two, I would say, very significant businesses. One was 65 million in revenue with multiple states around, multiple offices around the states in Australia, and then an IT managed service provider, which was one of the fastest growing in Australia. And then that's all kind of led me to this point where I was actually looking. I'd sold out of that business. I went and did a turnaround with a microcap listed technology business, and I just realized that the listed space, anything in the where you've got listed equities, it's just not my thing. It's nothing I'm passionate about. So I left that business, and as is always the case, I've had just people contacting me randomly saying, "Can you help me with my business?" So I gathered through reputation, a portfolio of clients, and off the back of that, I really wanted to make sure I was adding a lot of value to those clients. So I built a system called the Pathfinder model, which is the model that I use to coach my clients. And today, what am I? I'm a business coach. I work with two types of clients. One is early stage, one is mature stage. For mature stage clients, I work one-to-one, and I help these clients implement, hands-on, help them implement these 12 systems that comprise my Pathfinder model. And for my Ignite program, which is for earlier stage businesses, I train people, I provide the templates, I provide the tools, and I provide a little bit of, I'll often do sort of impromptu workshops where people have might have had some challenges with a particular concept. But that's what I do today. And in terms of one-to-one, so my mature stage businesses, I have a completely full dance card. I can't take on any more clients in that space. So I'm really looking to grow this group coaching, group training program called Ignite.
Yeah, beautiful. And your reputation and precedes you, Paul,
Thank you.
which is fantastic, right? That's where we want to be. So Paul, in looking at, and what we're really going to share with the listeners today are some tips around hiring and recruiting A player talent. But first of all, in a nutshell, why do we need to bother? What's wrong with having several B class players? B players, sorry.
Look, ultimately, if you want to boil it down to very, very basics, A players solve problems, they advance your business, they represent your business impeccably well. And unfortunately, B players just don't do that. So that's the very mechanical side of it. And I guess the philosophical side of it is, why would you not surround yourself with the very best people? If you're looking to grow a business, and running an SME is single-handedly the hardest thing on the planet to do, because you're starved of capital, you're starved of expertise, and it's very difficult to sell a small business. So if the job is so extraordinarily difficult, and we're all, I guess all SME owners are a little bit lunatic in their own way, make that job as easy as you can possibly do so. And the best way to do that is surround yourself with the very best people.
I think what you said there, it does hit home. And the what resonates with me there is if you're still involved at every stage of the business, that means that you don't have an A player person in there helping you, and that
Exactly.
just sucks the life out of you.
Everybody talks about you should go and work on your business, not in your business. Learn to delegate, learn to lead, all these things. And they're wonderful buzzwords, right? They're really wonderful buzzwords. But then, go to a seminar and you hear that, and then you go and sit in your office. And the first thing people think is how? Well, the start of how is to make sure you surround yourself with the very best people. You can't delegate anything to somebody who's not the best because they won't do it well. So that's why.
Just letting that land a little bit. So, you've got a wide range of experience in history and helping people in many ways. But I've heard you speak, and you've obviously got a passion on this hiring and recruitment of A players. How do we go about that? Where do we start? What do we need to know? Where does a
In
business
terms
owner
of
start?
well, the passion is actually twofold. One, it's my personal mission to make it easy for anyone to run a world-class business. And I do think the start of having a world-class business, so easy to run a world-class business, the start of that is having the best people. So the first part of how is to actually make that commitment. It's really easy to compromise your standards when it's hard to find people. And it's extraordinarily difficult to find great people. See, the first part is to make that commitment. The second part is there's a million and one tools out there. Like literally, there's an infinite array of tools. I've done loads of research and I've found what the world's best companies do, and I've turned that into a system that suits an SME. And basically, it's four very simple steps. And there's a whole lot underneath this. And for any of the listeners, if they're interested, and I'm very happy for them to reach out to me. The first is a scorecard. You've got to know what you want the person to do, which is sit down very carefully and define what that person's needs to do. The second is sourcing and, finding lots of applicants that suit that scorecard. So, and I mean lots. If you think about an A player as the top 10%, for any given role, you should really be reviewing at least 100 applicants, at least.
Wow,
I
okay.
have a client. I have a client, and this might frighten some people, but this is just facts. I have a client where I've just done an executive recruitment job with them, and we reviewed 3,475 applicants for one role. Yeah, right. You have to be committed. So sourcing, getting out in market, speaking, looking at lots of people, because if you're very committed to the best, by definition, 90% of those people are not going to be suitable. So you need to look at a lot because otherwise you're really constraining your ability to find this A player. The next bit is select. And the key thing I would say, given our short time today, but the key thing I would say around selection is throughout the process, you need to look for all the reasons why you wouldn't hire a person. What we tend to do when we're in the hot seat is we tend to what I call put our happy ears on and we fall in love with an applicant. And the problem with that is when you're in love with the applicant, you don't see all their flaws. Now, I think it's both morally correct and practically efficient to make sure that you get the best person for the job and equally that you are convinced that that job is the best for that person. Because if you don't have those two things combined like that, at a point in 6 months, in 9 months, in 12 months, somebody's going to be looking over their shoulders and saying, well, this isn't what I expected. So the select phase is really looking at selecting people out, not in. And then the final S of the four S's is sell. Like it or not, you're competing for candidates. If you can't sell your opportunity, your company, and you as a leader and sell it very, very well, you end up being sort of stuck in the basket of having to pay more money. And if somebody comes to your business for money, they'll leave for money. So you need to learn to sell all the benefits of the role. But they're the four S's I would say, which is scorecard, source, select, and sell.
And just as you say that, I've seen all the mistakes that we've made ourselves. I think we're first employee, we put an ad up on, I can't remember if it was Gumtree. And the first lady who came along, we hired, and then it's like, oh, well, I could do with somebody to help me with this. Does anybody know anybody? Okay, well, let's have a discussion of, can you meet the hours? Can you do this? And then you bring somebody else on, and the team grows like that. And I guess what I'm hearing is just probably an excuse. It's as we get into that mindset of, I don't have the time to do all this recruitment, or I don't have the time for all that, but we end up paying for it in the long run.
Well, I guess you'd ask yourself, if I don't have the time to do recruitment, does that mean I've got 6 months to work with somebody who's not equipped to do the job and who doesn't love the job? Like it's a bit of a logical fallacy to say I haven't got the time. You just literally have to make the time. I hired somebody over the Christmas break. I was writing an ad on the 20th of December when everybody else was out partying. I was screening applicants on Christmas Day and I was meeting them the day after Boxing Day. Like, could I have done with a break over the holidays? Of course, but this role's a very important role and I genuinely am extraordinarily confident that by doing that, I've got a great applicant.
And yet the cost of not having the best applicant is huge. It's much more than the
Immense.
recruitment process at the beginning.
Look, everybody talks about the cost of a bad hire is about three times their salary. I actually don't believe it because if you think about three times their salary, in any staff member you have, there's their salary, salary plus all your statutory obligations. There's the overheads of the business, and there's a requirement to produce profit. So, that's a hire costs about three times, not a bad hire. I would say legitimately the cost of a bad hire is somewhere between 6 and 10 times their salary.
Wow.
And I know that because I see it in businesses. It slows the business down. It distracts people. You end up spending 80% of your time managing people who are not equipped or not good enough to do the job. And the great people don't get any of your attention. It's like it's so perverse in a business that you've got to just say, this is why I say the first step on the how is make the commitment, be completely committed to the idea of getting the best.
Yeah, okay. And how do we measure that? How do we, you brought somebody on, we've done all this recruitment, we've done everything we can, we've committed, we've paid top dollar. I'm assuming, you make that assumption
No,
that you pay for the best talent. That was another question I was going to ask.
The top 10, so an A player is actually a specific definition. It's the top 10% of available applicants in a role for a salary. So if your business can only afford, I don't know, $50,000 for a salesperson, you've got to find the top 10% of people that are willing to work for $50,000. So to answer your question directly, how do you measure it? Exactly the same way you'd measure any other role in a business. Like how you measure somebody's performance. When I do a scorecard, I do accountabilities and I do core measures. Like you just measure it against that. So I'm thinking about what the accountabilities of the role are and what the key measures are of success. So when I hire the person, I've got something that I've examined in the cold, hard light of day versus when the person's sitting in front of me and we start making excuses for ourselves. Maybe the job was harder than I thought, and all these sorts of things that everybody says, me included.
Well, thanks for that definition. I should perhaps have asked that at the start. I mean, how do you define that A player? Because the first thing that jumps out in my head was affordability. You want the best talent. But so thanks for that definition. It really helps me look at our own recruitment. I've also heard that saying around, there's a couple of sayings that I've really liked around recruitment over the years, and one of them is, well, not so much liked, but it's hire slow, fire fast. Is that your philosophy as well? Is that
It's probably a bit of a nuance on that because that assumes that you've been the perfect manager and leader. And I don't, I'm an extreme high agency person. Like, I don't like blaming others for the outcomes that I didn't achieve because in actual fact, it puts the control in their hands. So I would say hire slow, definitely. But it's maybe the word I would use is hire intensely. Like you have to have high intention. You have to be like really, really high vigilance and like high diligence as well. Manage and lead well, I don't think you can hire an A player and not manage them well and not lead them well. Like, they'll leave. And if it turns out that you made a mistake, well, my internal cliche is the second I'm asking the question, I've already answered it. The day I'm thinking to myself, oh, is this person right for this role? I know what's going to come. But before I go and actually terminate somebody, again, there are, like it or not, I mean, business is all about making profit. You can't escape that. If your business doesn't make profit, it's not a business. But there are a lot of moral boundaries that you need to live within inside a business. Like just waking up and saying, I don't like this person anymore and sacking them, like they've got to go home to a family that, in some way, shape, or form, they're contributing to, the family, and they've got self-esteem and they're humans at the end of the day. So it's literally for me, the second I make my mind up, I need to start the process of acting. Now, the first thing I'll do is, have I actually sat down and explained to this person, these are my expectations, this is where you're falling short? That's a management exercise. If I've done all of those things and I can absolutely hand on heart say I've done it, well, I have to have the hard conversation, which is in, I can't continue employing you. I don't like glib sayings like hire slow, fire fast, because it kind of does encourage people who are under stress, small business owners, to do things that might have a short-term solve or benefit, but like creates so much in the way of long-term pain. I don't think that's the right thing to do. It's stop, think, manage it. And the second you have determined that you've done everything and that the person is actually not equipped to do the job, you do need to sit and have the hard combo with them.
I guess it comes from not letting it, and I think I've done the same as well. I think it's as you mentioned earlier that you put your smiley head on, and you really resonate with the person, and you really find yourself making excuses for them, and you let that go on for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year for way longer than it should have been, and then in hindsight you say, well, I actually knew 9 months
Yes,
ago.
you're damaging the business for the sake of an individual. And more often than not, you're damaging the business for the sake of your own ego. You don't want to accept you made a mistake and you don't want to own up to it. Therefore, you don't want to deal with it. That's more often than not the truth of it. So like you've got to stop and think about the greater thing, which is there's lots of other people in your business, presumably, that you're paying. They need to be continued to pay. And your business has clients and customers and all these sorts of things. So it does, it's a very serious responsibility.
I like that, and
Well, it
sometimes you might not,
is.
looking after,
It, it, you know, like you hear all this stuff about the hustle culture and all of this stuff. I bristle at that idea because it's really saying, oh, just get out there and make a few mistakes and, it doesn't really matter. It does matter. You're playing with people's lives. It's not your right to do that. So do it properly. This is why I have this benchmark about world class. And this isn't, I'm not talking about going slow. I'm talking about going faster all the time. But you have to have the guide rails in your mind of, I'm one, furnishing a service to my clients. They are paying me. I must provide value. In order to pay value, I need the very best people. If I've got the very best people, I've got to look after them because there's lives at the end of the line. It all has grave, it has magnitude, and treat it with that.
When you're working, with people, Paul, do you find that, and I'm bringing back to another, I guess, piece of advice that I was given way back in the days was always hire someone better than you, and I really loved that, and I just grasped that because it was a really early lesson that I got. But sometimes, do you find that everybody's got that same mindset? Or do you find that sometimes that people might struggle with that, or they're not actually looking for that in every role? What are your thoughts around that?
Well, I would say it's hire someone better than you for that job.
For that job, in that
Right.
role.
Because if you're leading the business, you have to be the best leader you can. So you've got to wake up every single day and try and be better. That's your job. So in that role, to Pete, humans are humans, right? We're just bags of hormones and emotions with a bit of skin and bone in there and a few organs. Of course your ego gets in the way. So like, I think always having this mind, this is why I'm very big on like creating an external thing as your point of accountability. My clients, so for me, my clients are it. My business exists to serve my clients. I'm expecting my clients to invest in me, whether it's attention, time, or money. I'm expecting them to invest in me. It is absolutely my obligation to provide value to the extent they're making that investment. And if I want to charge a premium, don't just put my prices up, add more value. So then it kind of, back to your question, I just use that as my external benchmark, which would drive in my own mind the idea I have to get someone that's better than me at this job. Because otherwise I can't do this thing for my clients. I can't lead my business. I can't, I have six staff now. I've got responsibilities. I can't do my own job if I'm trying to do seven jobs.
And on that, that people doing all the set different jobs, what do you think are the biggest pitfalls for business owners or leaders in the whole management, recruitment, talent acquisition space? What are the common pitfalls you see?
Just not being committed.
Okay.
Just taking shortcuts for the sake of expediency. That is the one thing I see constantly. Now,
Okay.
this might be a bit controversial, and I don't expect everybody to agree to it, but I do sincerely believe stripe, type, gender, sexual orientation, physical abilities, you have to put all of that secondary to merit, because if you put any of those factors as primary above merit, you're doing that person a disservice. And it's the most objective thing, like, have they got the skills to do the job? So somehow falling, and like, it's like you see this thing, oh, I don't know, I know her, she's a top shit, chop, excuse me, top chick. Like, so what if you know the person? That's a form of sort of discrimination in a way, but it's a shortcut of go through the process. Like, so the biggest mistake I see people make is just shortcutting the process for the sake of expediency, which is almost always, I'm desperate, I need someone.
Yep, I can see why that you would see that often.
Empty seats are cheaper than seats filled with bad people, always. And if you focus and just narrow down, you'll get the job done. There's no question of it.
So given that's the, you've got the what do you think about, and I know that you help people with the recruitment process. And you help them extensively. I've had conversations with you the last over the weeks that you spend, looking at these thousands of applicants to make sure you get the right person. What do you think in terms of managing recruitment yourself as opposed to outsourcing it to someone else? I understand, the simple answer is give it to an expert. I understand that. But, for somebody who might want to look at it themselves, is that I see your head shaking there. Is that a no, don't do it? Is that I'll put my happy face on and bring anybody in?
Well, let me give you a circumspect response. Recruitment is a core capability. And if you read any of the management texts, don't outsource core capability. So I don't see personally, now I'm not being disparaging of an industry, please don't get me wrong, but for me, I don't use external experts to recruit ever. And if a client says I'd like to do it, it's not my right to say to a client, you can or you can't. I'll fight pretty vociferously about what I believe is correct. But if it's the case, I make sure that they absolutely brief that recruiter really, really well. But very, very tight brief. If you think about the incentive stack in the game of recruitment, I charge you a percentage of somebody's salary. Well, I've got two primary incentives to make my business work well. One is to sell you an applicant, whether they're good for you or not. I'm not saying recruiters do that. I think mostly they're pretty good. But two, I've got no interest in making sure that I've actually got negative interest in making sure that a candidate at a lower salary is presented to you versus a candidate at a higher salary, because I'll get a higher fee. So I look at the incentives, which will drive the behaviors. And if I look at those two behaviors just in their own right, selling applicants and selling higher price applicants, I'm not getting the best outcome for me or my clients. So on that basis, I don't use recruiters. And if I do, I use them for a very, very tightly constrained, brief.
So that's for you, Paul, because you've got the expertise. But what about the small business owner who doesn't have the expertise that you've got?
Bring me up.
Yeah, well, there is that, right? But if you know if they're, and is it that? Is it looking at following the systems, learn it, get competent at the skill, bring it in-house and take it seriously, like you said?
Well, okay, here is my hypothesis based on 30 years of running businesses and not a flex, just a fact. If I'm not up to 1,000 business books I've read, I'd be very surprised. I'd be super surprised. And I continue reading. There's 12 systems that make a great business: recruitment, management, leadership, financial forecasting, operational planning, execution, service model design, pricing, lead generation, sales systems, sales techniques, and sales management. They are systems that, as a business owner, it's on you to master. And if you can master those systems, you'll do pretty damn well. So recruitment is the number one of those systems. Learn how to recruit. Like, because your business is just people doing stuff. Like, if the people part of that is not perfect, like just saying to somebody else magically, "Can you find me a great person?" How would they know? Well, they don't know. So it is the key. Like, the number one system, I would say, when you start your business, learn how to recruit as well as I can. And it is completely replicable. So that's what I'd be doing, is I'd learn how to recruit. I wouldn't send it off to somebody else, because
Which all comes
it's
under
a
that,
core competence.
yeah, which all comes under that bar of take it seriously. You know, take it seriously, and get the job done, step up, do what needs to be done for your business and your customers.
It's a hard job. Make it as easy as you can for yourself by being good. Don't lay on your back saying it's really hard. I can't get people. There's no people. It's like, yeah, sure, but no one can get people. Like, so, like, if everybody is exposed to the same recruitment market, well, crying about it won't solve the problem. Getting better at it solves the problem. Like, and I hate it when people talk about Gen Z. Oh, Gen Z and millennials, this, that, and the other thing. Everybody has to deal with the fact that you're going to have a multi-generational workforce. Get great at managing. Like you're not going to, it's like standing at Cottesloe Beach trying to scream the tide back. It won't happen. And then getting upset that the tide keeps on coming at you. You've got to find a way of managing those people really effectively. So learn the systems. It's all documented. None of this stuff has changed in about 1,200 years. The only thing that's really changed is the speed at which we transmit data. It's so consistent across the span of history. Like, this stuff is all documented. I just happened to be a business nerd, so I went and researched it. And I just thought it would be really helpful for people to understand these systems. So I got all of these systems that were used by GE and IBM and, all of these companies. Like, that doesn't suit a small business. So I've got those and I synthesized them to be completely perfect for a small business. That's literally the magic of what I've done. It's not that magic.
What is it they say? Business is easy, it's people that get in the way.
Well, yeah. Well, business is actually, I don't think business is easy. Business is extraordinarily hard. Business is simple. And more often than not, simple is the hardest thing to do. And it's really fun and it's really sexy to go off to a seminar or watch a webinar, read a book, and learn the latest new thing. Every new thing I read just reinforces to me that the old thing was correct. So just do the old thing, because that's what the great companies do. They do the old thing. They've worked some things around it, but like, do the old thing. That's the stuff that works. And I can say that I've got lots of gray hair now, so.
You've got the wash cards or the stories. Paul, look, I think you've answered a lot of things for me, and the biggest thing that I'm taking away for this myself is your core point there is start taking it seriously. Step up, take it seriously. So that's my takeaway for this, which
And
is fantastic.
it is across those 12 systems. If you think about those 12 systems, they just fall into four buckets, right? So if you can't remember the 12 systems, and I'll repeat them: recruitment, management, leadership, financial forecasting, operational planning, execution, service model design, pricing, lead generation, sales systems, sales techniques, sales management. If you can't remember those 12, it's people, performance, strategy, and growth. They are the four buckets of work you need to do on your, either in or on your business, however you think about it. But you have to do those things because if you don't get those things mastered, it all falls down.
What I'll do, Paul, is I'll put those the 12 areas, I'll put them in the comments, and then I'll put a
Sure.
link there for people who want to reach out to you.
Yeah, sure.
You know what my biggest takeaway there was, but and I've asked, I've sort of asked what I wanted to ask today, but is there something that I haven't asked that you'd like to cover or you'd just like to share before we wrap up today?
I think something I'd like to share, and it's maybe not anything practical, it's more an encouragement. And it is the hardest job in the world because all the other jobs that are very difficult come with the resources. You might say that the president of the United States, irrespective of, political stripe, that could be considered the hardest job in the world. I think the president's office has something like 5,000 people supporting the president. Well, yeah, it's a tough job, but they've got a lot of resources and they've got the budget of the US economy to back them up. Then you look at something like a specialist medico, they've got infinite resources. Then you say, well, I'm an SME. We have nothing. We have nothing. We're typically people who are a bit unhinged because you have to be unhinged to go into business, who have a passion for something, and typically they're a bit disagreeable. They think they can do the job better. So, right, it's a hard job. There's acceptance number one. If you're feeling like it's extraordinarily hard, correct. The encouragement, I would say, is it is the most important. So it's not only the hardest, it's the most important job in the world. Because if you look at all economies, everywhere around the world, they are the engine room of the economy. The absolute engine. They employ more people, use more like commercial real estate square meterage. They are the engine room of the economy. So you're doing a hard and a really, really important job. And there are people, if you're feeling alone, because that's a big part of doing an important, hard job, if you're feeling alone, that's completely understandable. But there's things like District 32. There's a growing base of business coaches around like me. So many accountants are passionate about helping SME owners. Lawyers, are there to help as well. I guess what I would say is, in part, in if you're going to say, like, well, I have to take it seriously because it's hard and important, there are resources, so many resources. And when I started my journey in business, and I'm a bit embarrassed because it kind of carbon dates me. Instead of just going on Google and researching, I'd have to go to Boffin's bookstore, which probably most of your listeners wouldn't even remember. I'd go to Boffin's bookstore and stand in the business section, and I'd kind of read a little bit of each book until I was satisfied, and I'd walk out with $150 worth of books. And that was my way. That was my resource. The amount of resource available to people now, it's infinite, it's endless. Like, the world's knowledge is available to you instantly. So my encouragement in all of this is, chapeau, you're doing something that's amazing, and you're benefiting people, and that's an absolutely fantastic thing. There are groups of people that understand how difficult this is, and really all they want to do is help you guys. So I guess that would be my encouragement, less anything practical.
Paul, thank you very much. That's what
Thanks,
business owners
Lorraine.
need to hear, right? We need that pat on the
Yeah.
back and that encouragement to keep going, take the next step.
Yeah, indeed.
So thank you very much for your time. I look
Thank
forward
you.
to more webinars, more interviews, and just seeing how you serve, Paul. Fantastic.
Excellent. Thanks,
Thank you very
Lorraine.
much.